Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow. You've already heard the dulcet tones of Jonathan Kidd of the Chelsea Fancast.
I was just doing a bit of the song.
It's wonderful.
Thank you.
We've got a special guest in the studio as well. It's a pleasure to be joined by Oliver Harbord, Chelsea correspondent for Football.London.
Can I just say, we are not worthy.
We are not worthy, and we have, as a result, got the inside line. Oliver, I've got to put you on the spot.
All right.
Is Lampard happening?
Yeah, it is. It's still, I mean, look, it's obviously pretty frustrating, and the longer it goes on, the more doubts there are, but he's still by far the number one contender. There's no real other names getting thrown into the hat at the moment. It's just a matter of time until it gets done. But, you know, it's good to see Cech at least back.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that was because that was set up for ages. How did that leak out? That's what I never understood. How did the fact that Cech was going to be the director of football before they'd played? They played Arsenal in the Europa League. That seemed a very strange piece of business. Did somebody leak it, or was it?
Well, I think it was always an obvious connection, obviously. Because, of course.
But bizarre, because he was the goalkeeper. And then, of course, the Arsenal fans are all asking for his head and saying that he's going to deliberately throw the ball into the net.
When he was actually the best player of the pitch.
With some fantastic saves.
All these things happen in the darkness, if you like, JK, to put it one way. I think it was an obvious choice, really, I think. I think it's a really sensible decision. I'm sure we'll come on to it a bit more later on.
Has he got no pretensions to be a coach, do you know, or involved in any other way? I mean, I know he's a bright guy, and there's obviously that kind of role would suit him down to the ground, because he speaks several languages, doesn't he?
I don't know exactly what his future plans are, you have to say, but I think that...
As an interim move,
I mean, he can do this sort of at the time of taking his badges as well at the same time, and I think it's just a great move to get him back involved in it's not going to be quite the same as Michael Emanuele was, but it's great to have him sort of around the club.
Ollie, I know you've been writing on this a lot this week. The job title, in theory, is new technical and performance advisor.
Yep.
Are they being quite careful not to use the word director?
Yeah, I think so. I think, look, we're talking about a guy who's just come, you know, just retired. He's only just hung up his boots. Hang up his hat, exactly, yeah. Hang up the hat, gloves, boots, it's all come off. Yeah. And I think that in this time, obviously with the transfer ban still looming as well, nobody's really expecting him to do much on the transfer basis because they can't do. So I think it's a good move for him to be there now where he can get his feet under the table a little bit. And they were very clear in their statement, actually, more clear than they've ever been about what his role would be, in the fact that they want him to have this link between the academy, the loanees, the players that are there at the moment on the pitch. And I think now when you do have this sort of period of transition that's going to happen this season with no players coming in and they're going to have to use some of the likes.
Is that definitely happening? Because they haven't objected. They haven't...
At the moment, it's still going on. Obviously, it's a very complicated situation, but at the moment, they've appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport to have it overturned or reduced. But as it stands, they still haven't applied to have it frozen or stayed, as they call, for the summer. So at the moment, they can't register any new players as it stands.
Are we going to see the youngsters come through, even with all of this spiel about Cech? Are they really going to start using them next season?
Well, they have to use some of them. They absolutely have to use some of them. I mean, the likes of Mason Mount's got a very good chance. Obviously, Tammy Abraham as well, because it looks very much like Gonzalo Higuain is not going to be extended. As Sarri said, he basically said on his press conference Juventus midweek that Higuain did not enjoy his time in England, which was pretty clear to see, I think, for everyone.
I don't think the Chelsea fans enjoyed it either.
He celebrated well, though, didn't he, when they won the Europa League? You wouldn't have thought he didn't look as if he wasn't enjoying it.
For a guy who hardly contributed to the whole Europa League campaign. I think that they're going to have to use some of these guys. There's no doubt about it. Just to fill the squad, really, to make sure, you know, you are competing on four competitions and they're going to hope to at least win one of them if they can.
But what about Morata, Bakayoko and Batshuayi? Is there any thought with them?
I think Morata's burnt his bridges as well, hasn't he? He's made it perfectly clear that he wants to stay.
Absolutely.
His was an 18-month loan deal as well, so he's, you know, unless Chelsea recall him, which I would find very unlikely. Bakayoko, he said he wants to be in contention. Yes. His agent said he wants to be in contention, but, you know, Lampard is not I don't think a massive fan of Bakayoko, particularly from what I understand. So
are any of them a massive fan?
Well,
we're certainly not massive
fans.
It's
interesting, isn't it? Because he had a great year at Monaco. He had a decent season at AC Milan as well. Yeah. You know, once he settled, he really played well for them. He was never, you know, Sarri never took to him at all. He was never the style of player
Sarri never took Zuma either.
Well, exactly. And,
so,
and,
you know, they're everybody, you know, saying, oh, Zuma's going to be back. And you think, well, how many centre-halves do Chelsea actually need? They've got, what's his name from Derby?
Tomori. Yeah.
And he's a decent player.
And also worked with Lampard as well.
And Clark Salter.
Yeah. I mean,
they've got a very decent player.
I actually did something on this. They had about nine players out on loan to centre-backs. You know, you look at Kalas. Miazga's one.
Yeah,
Josh Grant, who's a bit younger. Michael Hector, Wednesday. And Sheffield Wednesday liked him.
Why did they have all these players? Why are they so convinced that centre-half's going to be the area that they need to strengthen?
Well, I mean, but then this year, you know, with Cahill going, they will need at least one to come in.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I think that as we're talking about all these loanees, all the youngsters, they're going to have to use a few of them.
But then what about all the under-21s, the under-23s, I should say, who are all doing wonderfully well? Not one of them has come into contention, and they're clearly top players.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the under-23s is an interesting one at Chelsea, because actually a lot of them are still under-19s, under-18s, under-19s, because a lot of the under-23s at Chelsea are out on loan. They're all, getting senior football. That's generally how it works there. So, you know, are there any of those in contention right now that have been playing in the, you know, the UEFA Youth League final, that got to the UEFA Youth League final?
Indeed.
Probably not right now. I'd say a lot of them would go out on loan.
But the three boys who were the substitutes in the Europa League final, they're all part of that lot, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So the likes of Conor Gallagher, McEachran. Well, yeah. McEachran's contract actually runs out, and I believe that they have offered him a new one, but at the moment he hasn't signed. Conor Gallagher, who was the Academy Player of the Year, fantastic player. I've seen him a few times this year, and I think he's got something really about him.
Well, what position does he play?
He's a central midfielder as well. He sort of plays in a, you know, in the three, he would play slightly further forward.
In a possible Jorginho this
rare. Further forward.
If Jorginho doesn't go, of course.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that, you know, for him, he's not played any senior football apart from the Cherry Trophy. So I think for him, it'd be a good opportunity to go out on loan and get his chance somewhere. And then Billy Gilmour, another youngster as well, Scottish under 21, I think he's played as well.
Yeah.
You know, they've got some greatly talented
players.
They've
got some fabulous players who, of course, in 1964 would have been given the opportunity to all play in the first team and would all become stars. And then, well, I would. That's what's the slight dilemma about this. Yeah, and they'd all get in and we'd all be saying, God, they're great stars, aren't they? Wow, look at them. And they'd all play for England or Scotland and Wales.
It's, you know, it's obviously there's so much talent there, but it's just whoever, you know, if it is Lampard, who we think it obviously will be.
With Morris?
Yeah, I would expect so. Yeah. I think that would be part of the negotiations. The deal, and again, you know, another player who knows all these guys really, really well from his time as the under-18s head coach, you know, quadruple winning head coach for the under-18s. He knows these guys as well as anybody. So if he's going to get the best out of Mount and Abraham and Reece James and the like, then there's going to be some.
If we are dealing with a Lampard-Cech duo, how important is it that basically two of Abramovich's mates are running the club?
That's quite an interesting question, actually. That's one of the things I've seen floating around on social media. This, you know, is will Cech just be a bit of a yes man? Because there was some of that with Emanala as well floating around. Because Emanala was, you know, Abramovich's mate as well in a lot of ways. But they have to be stronger than that. I guess the deal is, I guess, that Abramovich will trust them to go in the right direction. And what I like about the Czech appointment is since Emanalo's left and during Emanalo's time as well, there was just a real short-termism over transfers. And, you know, a manager would say, I want this guy because he fits this position. And then the next manager comes in and goes, I don't want him.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Zappacosta, for example. You look at bizarre. Danny Drinkwater, for example.
Yeah,
Bakayoko is another one as well, you know. These guys.
Drinkwater is the Bogard of our days. Bogard was only on 40,000 a week, whereas Drinkwater's apparently
a little bit
100
more.
A week.
Yeah,
he's
enjoying
it.
I don't understand.
He was a decent player for Leicester, and he should have been given it. Well, perhaps he didn't do anything doing training. We don't know.
He turned up.
He was there. That's true.
But we knew about Sarri as well, that when he came, and he made this quite clear, that he had a focus on about 15 players and that those guys that were out of that picture, they were never likely to get into picture. You know, the likes of Drinkwater, the same with Moses as well, Cahill, another one.
But interestingly, Zappacosta actually started playing better towards the end of the season When he came on, he did.
Where, against Eintracht, yeah. And he cleared one off the line and made a couple of decent efforts. He actually looked like the player you wanted him to have.
Well, the player that he possibly was in the very first game when he scored from practically the halfway line.
Against Karabag, when everyone thought, who is this guy?
Yeah.
What kind of responsibility would Cech have for transfers?
I think at first it's not going to be quite as strong as an Emanalo was. I think that, you know, his job in the first sort of year or so, especially if this transfer ban stays for the whole year, is to be more of a guy looking at what's going on the pitch and then taking that to the board, but not, you know, he doesn't have the final say. Emanalo was a guy that, you know, he'd be in all the pictures and sort of with the shirt and the new players and all that. And it's always been Granovskaya's ground, that the transfers and dealing with the negotiations. You know, Cech will obviously have his say on the way he thinks things should go. He'll obviously work very closely with the head coach. He'll work quite closely with the board as well. But when it comes to the actual nitty-gritty on who they go for, that will probably, for the meantime, for now, until he gets more experience under his belt and that sort of side of things, that I think it will still be more sort of based around the board.
Interesting stuff.
Have they needed this kind of intermediary, do you think? Is it the fact there's been some kind of dislocation between the players and the board or the manager? Is he an intermediary between the manager and the board so he can get ideas that he can receive stuff that perhaps the manager is misinterpreting? Or
well, I think so. And also, I think it stops that idea, as I said before, about this idea of a manager saying, I want a guy for this position.
Yeah,
but without
looking
at the bigger picture of things. And without a guy saying, well, actually, we can use this guy we have for a bit like Loftus-Cheek, for example. You know, he went on loan to Crystal Palace.
Where he played very well, according to the Palace fans I spoke to, who said he was completely brilliant.
And yet they brought in Bakayoko and Drinkwater for 40 million quid each, or whatever it was. And you're thinking, well, that's money down the drain. I think that's the point of Cech as well.
It's the same as that, because the people were saying, why did they buy him when they had Aina? And they put Centeno out to Torino.
Exactly.
Maybe he's now been purchased by
yeah,
by
exactly.
Torino, course,
and he had a very good season. And only for €10 million as well, which this day and age is nothing for a guy that age as well. Mm. So, yeah, I think actually for Cech, I think it is part of that, being in that intermediary as well.
Mm, well, could it be a new era? Could we see the kids involved? And could it be Lampard? It sounds like it will be. Coming up, is he going to get a chance?
This is Love Sport.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, Jonathan Kidd of Chelsea Fancast, and of course, Oliver Harbord, Chelsea correspondent for football.london, who's not messing around. He says Lampard is going to happen, but Oliver, when it happens, how much time is he going to get? How much patience?
I mean, I'd like to say a good 5 years, but I think we all realistically know that that might not be the case. I think if there's any manager that's going to get the job, I think it'll be, for a longer term, it'll be Lampard.
He's the best looking out of all the candidates, which is very relevant.
Would you describe him as dishy?
Yeah, I would.
He's got oddly better looking.
Can I say,
in a
kind of bloke's way here, I'm not appreciating him.
It doesn't have
him
to be a bloke's way.
No, it doesn't. I know in this modern day and age, but just, you know, I felt to add that. I'm not fancying him, that's what I'd like to say.
Okay.
And funny enough, I could fancy him. It wouldn't make any difference. So I don't know why. Yeah, I fancy him. No, I don't fancy him. But because I think that the last manager suffered from several problems.
Not being good looking enough.
Not being good looking enough, not being English, not being able to communicate properly, being not shaving enough, wearing his glasses on top of his head, which apparently you're not supposed to do, not being passionate enough.
You're just describing me at the moment.
And is that you? Is that you? Well, that's the thing. I think it's very, for the rest of us, it's very ordinary. But can I just go on about Sarri for a moment? Because I just honestly feel the very fact that he's been appointed manager of Juventus speaks volumes for the kind of manager he actually is. And I reckon, because I love the fact that he said that Hazard got in the way of his plans, which I thought was pretty obvious. Mm. If you watched any of the patterns, you thought Hazard doesn't work the way he wants to play. And I reckon if this season, if he'd be given an opportunity, I think he'd have got it better. It would have been better. Mm. And because he'd also have had a striker, because let's be honest, every striker he had, Higuain, was a disaster beyond belief. That really was scraping the bottom of the barrel, having a bloke wandering around, not running ever, was the most bizarre transfer, loan, whatever it was. And before that, similarly, Morata going into complete meltdown, having been pretty good the season before for a period before he was injured. So I felt he had all the cards stacked against him. But I felt that subsequently, Twitter has just come, and Facebook, of the people I look at, has melted down with hatred for Surrey in a way. Mm-hmm. Like even the show last week, which I thought was ridiculous to have two people who I know are anti-Surrey, but when I'm with them on the show, they never exhibit the same amount of vitriol and hatred for him that spewed out last week.
You came on the show and offered a rebuttal.
Yeah, but no, after 6 minutes, it then carried on. You know, I was you couldn't get my signal. You know, I was just bemused. I had then to go out. I had to do something. That's one of the
I was half
reasons,
expecting to see you banging on the window.
You know, I felt like
through.
It, the way things were going. Well, no, let's try and have objectivity about this. Let's not try and get involved with a complete, I don't know, of dismissal of his skills. He was trying to do something and it didn't work very well. And he was always trying to find a pattern going on. He was always looking at the games thinking, what exactly is he trying to do here? He made some terrible errors and he made some ridiculous errors in games that, I don't know whether he knew that everybody will say they don't know nothing about it. One of the other things against him was the fact that he hadn't played professional football, which everybody then says, he's not good enough. He's a banker. But what does he know about
did
it?
Did Jose play professional football to any level of any
No, of course he didn't. But he was a winner. That's the difference. And they'd say, he hasn't won anything, poor, you know, sorry, he hasn't won anything. He's never done
people
anything.
People won't say the same thing about Lampard and his management, will they? I mean, he's won everything as a player, but, you know, he's a general novice, obviously. Yeah. We know
but we
this.
Can segue back into Lampard here beautifully. Beautifully,
No, but
rightly so.
With the Sarri stuff as well, obviously, I think that for me it was a couple of things. It was obviously the stubbornness on the pitch at times.
Absolutely. Well, the ludicrousness in the Man United game at the very end of not putting another striker on and substituting right back. Who was it? It wasn't Azpilicueta he put in the middle. He brought Zappa Costa on.
Yes,
And you just you could see the hatred in the fans' eyes, absolutely. The consequence
and
of
that. But I think that also the lack of connection with the fans, that's the thing that killed him, really. And I also think this is why Chelsea are moving slightly towards this direction of bringing legends back.
Yeah, do you think they've responded to the fans? Do you think this is really a...
I think part of it is to do
that. Because they responded to Benitez being involved, weren't they? They didn't realise the opprobrium that he was suffering from.
Also, because as well, the Chelsea board wouldn't have appreciated just how it would have reacted, the Chelsea fans would have reacted. Because if you looked at him at Napoli, you know, you don't have to talk about his football. The Napoli fans loved him.
Oh, completely.
They loved everything about him. They now absolutely hate him, obviously, now this move to Juventus. Yeah. He's probably done the worst thing when it comes to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that connection with the fans, that was one thing I could never understand. You know, as a guy coming into the English football in your first year, you know, get that connection with the fans. Yeah. You lose 4-0 to Bournemouth, right? It was rubbish. It was absolutely awful. Go over to the fans and take whatever it is, applaud them, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It just never happened.
No, he was a PR disaster. Mm. That was one of the things I felt. But I almost felt the club should have advised him in that way. Like, yeah, I don't.
They might have done, but again, you know, he was stubborn on the pitch.
Whether
he
paid
attention,
he with them and just said, I know what I want to do.
Know.
Yeah, yeah, good point.
Ollie, you obviously saw him in his press conferences every week. What was your perception of Sarri as a bloke?
Well, he hated press conference, really.
Was it just you?
Yeah, well, no, it wasn't just me, yeah. No, but I mean, like, he would strike up a couple of relationships with the journalists in the sense of, you know, during it with good bits of banter and stuff like that. He was also, you know, as a journalist, he also gave very good lines. He wasn't dry at any time. He'd say what he felt. He would call out his players at times. I remember he called out Kante specifically for the Tottenham, after the Tottenham defeat, the first defeat they had at Wembley.
He was too far forward.
Yeah,
said
he was
too,
you know,
forward, not, yeah.
You know, he no player was untouched, really, which was a nice, you know, it was quite refreshing. I think, you know, the one thing that obviously is a little bit frustrating is towards the end of the season, and, you know, he's sort of saying, I love the Premier League, I love England, I love, you know, I want to move, you know, if I'm going to move anywhere, I'd like to stay in the Premier League. And then he's saying that sort of a week before the Europa League final, and then 2 days after the Europa League final, he's saying, actually, I want to go because Juventus are up, you know, interested in him. That sort of thing obviously gets quite frustrating. But as a bloke, he generally seems, you know, quite pleasant, generally. You know, he seemed like a nice, as I said, he was happy to have jokes with people and, you know, a little bit of ad libs during the press conferences and saying what he felt. And he just didn't like them. I think that's the one thing he also couldn't get to grips with. You know, in Italy, you have these sporting directors who would say everything, especially when it came to transfers. You know, De Laurentiis would be on the, you know, on the mic every other week talking about transfers. He came to Chelsea. You know, Granovskaya doesn't interview, Abramovich doesn't say anything, and he had to deal with all this, and he just couldn't be bothered with it. That's not his side. I think that's, when it came to the English press conferences, you know, when it's in Italy, and I've experienced it during the Champions League stuff and the Europa League, you know, they're very much more about the tactics and what happens on the pitch, whereas, you know, English football and the English media is generally more about, you as a person.
We love a rumour.
just to get to feel the guy as well, feel what he's like.
Well, no, I just think it's complete rubbish. It's just, you know, we've been associated with people. It's like pick a manager, any manager. It's just kind of, you just think, oh, who's free and available, who happens to, and who's good looking enough?
I enjoyed your tweet yesterday. For anyone who hasn't seen this, JK tweeted a fairly low resolution image of a football boot. and said, this is a football boot, not dissimilar to the kind of football boot that Frank Lampard would be wearing should he become Chelsea. It went on for quite a while.
It did, yeah. No, it was one of four. That was one of
was
four.
It?
I don't know if you know. Yeah, you would have seen earlier on. There was a picture of Frank, and it said, "This is Frank Lampard." Because what had happened was somebody had posted a picture of Frank on a boat, and it said Frank Lampard on a boat in the Riviera, just round the corner from Roman Abramovich's yacht. I mean, for goodness sake, as if, you know, what era it was. So I put a picture of Frank in a tux, and I said, Frank Lampard on Roman Abramovich's boat. And I went through all the players, Torre Andre Flo, Aquamarina Gravaskaya,
yep.
And Harry Redknapp is there hitting Dennis Wise, because Dennis Wise, of course, has said he's not up to being manager, Frank. But also, I then put another picture. And somebody
said, is a birthday cake.
Oh, yeah, this is it.
Good. Similar to the one about to be cut by Frank Lampard on Roman Abramovich's yacht at this very moment before he signs the managerial contract for the Blues for the next four seasons. Harry Redknapp, his uncle, is there and has just hit Dennis Wise, which we can, of course, confirm didn't happen. It is interesting, though, that there was all this social media.
But it's also every day. He's apparently signing every day, and you get decent papers saying, The Sun, he's signing tonight. Sun's put on Twitter, it's happened every day. And then somebody else comes in, what's that one? Gazzetto
dello Sport.
Yeah, dello Sport.
Yeah, but they just seem to talk absolute rubbish nonstop.
they said Sarri
was leaving. And when we lost 6-0 to City, Sarri to be sacked tonight on that. And these are supposedly proper papers. But everybody, what gets me about the whole social media thing is that people absolutely believe them. Yeah. Yes, Jonathan is hooked in completely and utterly. But they do. They believe them. I'm in despair. And everybody is now completely convinced that Frank is coming.
Well, we've just been told by a man with inside knowledge that he is.
But what if it doesn't happen? But it's likely to happen. But it hasn't specifically. Why is everybody saying it's happening tonight? Why do they all keep saying that?
Well, I can't tell you exactly why everyone's been saying that. But I mean, look, things can change. Obviously, they can. We've seen things that have almost been nailed on to happen. You have to look at some transfers that do it. As it stands, you know, Frank is almost nailed on to be the next Chelsea boss. He could wake up on Saturday morning and go, actually, panic, I don't want to do it anymore.
Absolutely.
You can't guarantee it's going to happen.
Tell me a couple of transfers that should have happened that didn't, that I can then go home and cry about.
Like the Mikel one. He was pictured in the Man United shirt, wasn't he?
Willian was another one
where it was almost guaranteed.
Another example is that every transfer window, Willian is apparently going to Barcelona.
And Paris Saint-Germain at the same time.
But also what happens is the price is now getting less and less and less. It was 60,000, what am I talking about? Million. 50 million. It's now 30 million.
That is probably due to his contract as well, because he's only got a year left of his deal. Whereas Hazard is still in his prime.
Yeah.
You know, William. I can understand that side of it, but I do know what you mean.
Yeah.
Well, this is a microphone, much like the one that Frank Lampard will be speaking into once he becomes Chelsea manager.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, where we've had a very touching message into the show.
It's from Martin Flint, in fact, who sent something to Chidge, and I'll just read a bit of this. It's, hi Chidge and the boys, and of course Alex too. She's nowhere to be seen with a kiss. Oh, I say. My name is Martin. I'm a 51-year-old Chelsea fan. Three kids, Ben, Luca, like myself, and two boys are members and go to as many games as I think I can. They think the show is fantastic. Oh, great. Thank you. The cast members, we're not the cast, darling, all do a wonderful job, which keeps me informed on what's happening at the club. I want to tell you a story about one of my oldest friends, Chelsea fanatic, season ticket holder, travels the country, the world, following his beloved Blues. At the age of 11, I went to a new school, Dunraven, in Streatham. I didn't know anyone as I just moved to Streatham from Brixton. This is where I met Danny Dumbarton, a mad Chelsea fan. fantastic name. At the time, I was going to watch Crystal Palace. My older brother used to take me. So as myself and Danny became friends, he took me to the Bridge as an 11-year-old. I was hooked instantly, fell in love with the club, the atmosphere and the blue Chelsea Umbro kit. Wonderful shame. Wonderful shame you can't buy this one anymore. As the years go by and I became a dad, I gradually stopped going to games, but not Danny. To this day, he still goes regardless of prices, etc. Anyway, Danny is a unique fan. Last week, we got a call from another Chelsea lifelong fan, Terry Corkfield, bearing bad news. Danny has been taken into hospital. Danny, 51, still goes swimming 3 or 4 times a week at Tooting Lido. He used to live near there. Also still plays football. Whilst the Lido, he unfortunately suffered a heart attack. We all feared the worst. I myself was shaken, but lucky for Danny, there was a doctor amongst the 6 people there, performed CPR, eventually saved his life. He was not breathing for over 10 minutes. They had to break his ribs to save him. He amazingly pulled through. He's now on the road to recovery. Thank God. So I was wondering if you guys give him a shout out. Of course we can. Danny Dumbarton. The only ways of getting a message from the club to him would be fantastic. I'm going to help him in his recovery. Without Danny, I'd probably be a Palace fan. So I owe him unbelievably for all the good and bad times I've had and for the joyous times I've had with my kids. Was it 17 trophies in 17 years? And as they only know these great times. Anyway, I've just introduced Danny to the podcast. Get well soon, mate. I'll keep you soon. Thanks, guys. Great job. Keep the blue flag flying high. Up the Blues. I know you won't find. I know you won't mind. Great stuff. So, well done there. Well done, Martin. That's just excellent. So, we've given him a shout out. So
get well soon, Danny.
And yeah, get well soon, Danny. I hope everything's okay. Please contact Chidge and tell us how he's doing. Good. All right. Excellent, mate. Well done.
Wonderful, wonderful stuff. We're still talking Lampard.
Yeah.
Who will be wearing football boots, eating birthday cake, talking to microphones and all the rest of it. Oliver, as far as you're concerned, who are the players who could benefit from a Lampard managerial reign? I know you've written about this week.
Yeah, I think obviously you look at the loan players that are coming back, they're going to get their chance, not just because of Lampard, but also because of the transfer ban. The two youngsters he's obviously worked with quite closely this year, Mason Mount and Fikio Tomori. Tomori obviously being Derby's player of the year as well. They should get at least a chance over the summer, I would have thought. And seeing as the under-21s have just been dumped out of the Euros tonight, I think that they'll probably come back a bit earlier to pre-season.
Romania.
Yeah, to Romania. That's not gone down particularly well. People like Loftus-Cheek, I think, is going to get, more of a chance, you have to say. More of a chance just to really...
I would hope so. He was so good towards the end of the season.
Absolutely. I got quite a bit of stick, actually, for the piece I wrote over this, because people were saying, well, Loftus-Cheek did get his chance. And then I was kind of reminded, he only made 6 starts.
Yeah.
And I know some of that was to do with his back injury. Obviously, he's still got this ongoing back injury, and you have to make sure that that's all sorted. But that was criminally low for a player who did show just how good he could be towards the end of the season.
There's a Hullet-like quality to him.
Absolutely.
The way that he screens the ball and almost bounces off people. He's so enormous.
Incredible. But he's got the technical ability and if he can put his mind towards that, then he could absolutely be...
I think he's improved as a person as well. I think I get the impression he's got so much more confidence.
Yeah, and also he will benefit massively from a guy like Lampard coming back into the system and seeing this guy and learning from him every week, and also Jody Morris and the like there. The people like Reece James will obviously...
Do you think he's going to be given a chance? You'd have to hope so.
Reece James, I think obviously Azpilicueta is still probably the number one right back for now, and obviously, as we would expect, likely to be the club captain next year as well.
Yeah.
But Reece James, he's shown that he has got all the qualities. He's obviously got a bit of an unfortunate injury at the moment as well, which will probably see him out for the summer. I think that Lampard would look at him rather than Zappa Costa next year.
And Frank would be playing in a very different way to Sarri, except he does do a press, doesn't he, Frank? They do, the Derby were pressing. But because my fear is that I felt that that Dave Azpilicueta had a season of not really being able to cope with what was required of him.
Yeah.
In a sense, I think Kante improved. Kante played the way that Sarri wanted. Mm. But because Sarri actually wanted him to sit near Jorginho to be a kind of cover for him. But he obviously played further forwards. But his best position, let's be honest, is this.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting, actually. That's another one as well, that the sort of Jorginho-Kante axis this year is going to be an interesting one to see. Because it was another point that Sarri made. He didn't feel like Jorginho could play in a 2 in midfield, which is always a bit strange to me. So it'd be interesting to see that. And it might actually help, Aspie and whoever plays on the left, Emerson and Jorginho, to have Emerson or Alonso to have a bit more protection down that side.
Alonso
as well.
Recently said that he had great difficulty in performing the way that was required of him.
He was one of the one players that really sort of a bit more outspoken. Obviously Cahill, for, you know, but for a player that was played regularly, he said that he actually struggled to what Sarri was trying to get him to do, and which is why his performances
dropped pretty dramatically, which they did. Absolutely. Yeah. But he seemed to improve towards the end of the season.
Yeah, he did, but he ended up, you know, he lost his spot, and he lost his spot for the bigger games. I think that was the thing for him, you know, he lost his spot for, you know, the, obviously the Europa League final and things like that. And that's a bit of a blow for a player who just signed a new deal and had been a regular for the last two seasons as well.
Coming up, it's time for a brand new feature, our first ever Legend of the Week.
This is Love Sport.
And this week, Oliver, there was only one man it could be.
Petr Cech has to be. I think, you know, it's a close call between that and Frank, but I think we'll wait for Frank Lampard to be next week. As the
Why is that?
Well, when he's finally confirmed. I think the Petr Cech, you know, I think it's quite clear where the fan loyalties lie when it comes to Arsenal and Chelsea fans over Petr Cech. They're not obviously very happy, but for Chelsea fans, this is the start of what feels like, I would say, a bit of a new era for a lot of fans. You know, this is a guy who gave Chelsea fans so much success, and along with a lot of other players in that team, but you know, to see him back in the fold is pretty great.
How good was he in his prime?
Great. The best, I think. You know, is absolutely.
Particularly when he came back from being kicked in the head in the Reading game, which I was at. It was the most bizarre experience. Were you at that game?
I wasn't at the game, no.
Oh, God, because you had to wait for about 40 minutes while he was... all the ambulances arrived.
So it was Stephen Hunt, wasn't it?
He had a collision with Stephen Hunt.
Skull, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And then... Cudicini went in goal and he got injured.
Yeah.
He got clattered.
John Terry.
And John Terry went in goal. yeah. It was absolutely bizarre. Bizarre series of events went on.
But it's a you know, a valid point that as well about the injury is a lot of people just wouldn't have come back from it. Just even with the helmet and everything, they still wouldn't have, you know, and I know there was some questions around his abilities straight after that, but the guy just proved that he was absolutely superb. And as we said, that Europa League final, he was Arsenal's best player. Yeah. And he was, you know, hanging
some
up the boots.
And
you could say that his mind was could have been elsewhere because he probably knew what was coming with Chelsea.
He was deeply upset at the end of the game
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
he really worked up for it.
A born winner.
As an Arsenal fan, what did you think of his performance?
As a what? Who?
Yourself.
Where?
No, there isn't one in here. Sorry, I made a terrible mistake there for a second.
I think if I were an Arsenal fan, I would have been very impressed.
Have you switched to someone else?
Yeah, I'm a Millwall fan.
Are you?
It's only because they're already in the building. I've got to be careful.
By 9 o'clock.
Yes, by 9 o'clock. Yeah, he was Arsenal's best player in that final. I'm interested when we're talking about the ownership of the fans over Petr Cech, whether he's Chelsea or Arsenal. It's very, very clear that he is Chelsea. Who do you reckon in the potential divorce gets Cesc?
Oh, that's a good question. That's always a... I'll let you have that one, Jake.
No, I don't even know what he means. What do you mean gets in?
Who do you think in Cesc Fabregas?
Fabregas.
In his heart of hearts, who does he prefer, Chelsea or Arsenal?
I mean,
Arsenal?
To be fair, you saw him celebrating with the Chelsea fans after Chelsea players after the
Europa
League.
He's got to, though, hasn't
he? No, and he did go into the Arsenal players as well.
He could legitimately celebrate with Barcelona if they ever won anything, couldn't he, really? It's difficult as a player, if you've played for all these teams. I always think, who is it? I was always disappointed that Alan Birchnell, who was a Chelsea centre-forward in the late 60s, ended up playing for Leicester and being their man on the pitch who just talked about everything because he was like their big celeb. You know, he was the Neil Barnett, the spy of that period. And I was disappointed because he was there or thereabouts in the first team, but he always wore his I was little, that's why I liked him so much. There were characteristics, it's a bit like Dennis Law. He wore his long sleeves over his hands and stood a little bit like a teapot. And perhaps it wasn't anything to do with his skills. And he had long blonde hair and looked very groovy. Yeah. So that, you know, that's a
groovy.
Kind of,
there's groovy. A word I haven't heard. Groovy.
Yeah, but that's a word from that era. That's why I said it deliberately.
Actually, Cesc's done quite well to keep everyone on side. Mm. You know, I think obviously not going directly from Arsenal to Chelsea was probably, and going to Barcelona where he was, you know, before. I think that. He's kept everyone on the side, really, I think. I think, you know, the only way he could ruin it is if he became Real Madrid manager or something.
So he could actually...
then it might be an issue.
He could legitimately have celebrated with both sides, whoever won the Europa League final.
Yeah, absolutely.
But would he have done that? Would he, well, if he was there, perhaps what he was going to do.
Yeah, I think he probably would. I mean, he... I, do believe that he did go into the Arsenal dressing room as well. So I just don't think he paraded it on social media quite as much because, you know, he's not going to gloat in there.
No, defeat.
Any Arsenal fan who has a problem with Cesc Fabregas for ending up at Chelsea is a moron. Like an absolute dyed in blue, as it were, moron.
Because Arsenal didn't offer him a contract.
At that point, why should
Wenger didn't want him back?
Why should Cesc not go to Chelsea? Yeah. Let's have a final word on Petr Cech. There were so many good performances, so many clean sheets, but if you had to pick a real standout game, what would you go for?
Well, of course, the Champions League final.
Yeah, has to be.
Yeah, completely phenomenal.
I mean, let's not forget, it wasn't just that, the penalty save.
No, it was everything.
That penalty save right at the end of the game. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
You know, what a keeper, to be honest. I mean, absolutely. But you talk about some of the Premier League all-time greats. He's up there.
What a defensive performance that was as well. Mm. I know Drogba gave away the penalty, didn't he? The nitwit at the time. I remember thinking, don't be in the bug. Yeah. But,
from zero to hero.
Yeah. But then, at the end, one of the great moments, I'm afraid I burst out laughing when Drogba went up to take the penalty because I thought this is the most unlikely scenario that I've ever watched on a football pitch because they were battered. And you had Luiz and Cahill both on one leg. And as you say, Cech just playing out of his skin.
Yeah.
It was joyous. Well, everyone remembers it as Drogba's night and Drogba's last kick of the game and all of this, but actually Cech was an absolutely fundamental part of that win, and that's why Petr Cech is this week's Legend of the Week.
Hooray!
This is Love Sport.
We're taking your calls here on the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. That number is 0208 7020 558. You can ring us, you can WhatsApp as well. We're joined on the line by Mark, who's calling in all the way from Cincinnati. Good evening, Mark. Do you reckon Lampard is the right fit as manager?
First, I want to say good afternoon to all, or good evening.
Hello.
Evening.
You're right.
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing well. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we're both doing well. Yeah, Ollie and I are doing well.
Very good.
And Johnny's doing well.
I'm all right.
Yeah, good.
All right. with Lampard, it's so hard to say because I have no doubt that Frank Lampard can be a great manager. It's just hard to imagine Chelsea being that patient. And as great as Frank coming back is and great as Petr Cech coming back is, there's still a part of me that thinks that this is all still just one giant publicity stunt because we have the ban. So, you know, if we didn't have this ban, would we hire Petr Cech? Would we bring in Frank Lampard? What would we be doing? Would we focus on playing the youth? So it's just, I'm sort of skeptical on what exactly the motive is. So, you know, next summer, are we going to go right back to what we've been prior to we were before the ban? There's just so many unanswered questions.
And get rid of him, you mean? After we've let him in, you mean? Do you think he's there
for, let him in or treat him the same as old managers, or are we going to go back to buying more experienced players as opposed to trusting youth? Like, I don't know what we're doing, and they don't communicate anything with us. And a lot of this just seems forced, which is not the same thing as doing something on your own volition, at least the way I see it.
That's another interesting point, actually. We're talking about, you know, rumours and social media. And it's a point Cesc Fabregas made about sort of the club as a whole. They do have this void when it comes to actually telling the fans what is going on, and that is one of the issues when it comes to things like this, because, you know, they don't, as we said before, you know, Granit Xhaka never does an interview, Abramovich never speaks unless it's about a, you know, a sort of particular item that he's sort of promoting, but you know, and it does cause this sort of vacuum around what is actually going on and what the long-term plan is. Now look, Chelsea's long-term plan is to win trophies, it is to be successful.
Which they've achieved,
and they don't really care in a lot of ways how they get there. And I completely understand your point. I do believe if there was no transfer ban, I don't think we'd be looking at Frank Lampard.
But they'd be going.
No, you have a couple more years as manager of Derby. Try and get them up into the Premier League. Try and have a season in Premier League manager, and then there'll be a job for you at some point. And I feel maybe with Cech, I'm not quite so sure. I feel like Cech, there was always a job there for him, even without the ban. But with Lampard, I do completely agree. I feel like it's slightly been forced upon them with this transfer ban, and they're just going to try and do the best they can and hope that it works out.
Are other clubs more transparent, though? Do they state reasons for doing things? I don't think they do. Do they really?
Well, sometimes they do, and sometimes they're mocked for doing it. And that's the other issue. You know, they all come out with statements, and you're thinking, well, we don't need to know this. But, you know, I do think that when it comes to things like this, there's just nothing and nothing and nothing, and then suddenly something happens, and then fans are now then, you know, worried about it.
Mark, if this time around Lampard gets sacked, is it his only chance at the Chelsea job?
I guess it would depend on how exactly he got sacked, I would say. It just depends. I mean, if he gets the, you know, if he gets the Carlo Ancelotti treatment, I don't know if he's going to want to come back.
No, it's a very
if he
good
was
point.
Successful somewhere else after he was sacked, then it might be in a position that they might think, yeah, let's get him back
could
again.
Be, could be the new Gus Hiddink. Mark, thanks yeah. ever so much for your call.
Thank you,
in.
Mate. Thanks for ringing in. Really great to hear from you.
All the way from Cincinnati. Oliver, I want to nail down a few quotes that are being reported from Maurizio Sarri's first press conference as Juve manager, because he appears, obviously in translation, to have fired a few shots broadly at Chelsea and sort of at Eden Hazard as well.
Yeah, look, when he was talking about Hazard, he said it a couple of times during his sort of reign at Chelsea that having Hazard in the side meant that defensively they weren't as so cohesive, which is why he played him as the false nine in some of the bigger games, because he wanted more defensive-minded players, Willian and Pedro
together.
To get that. Yeah. You know, the thing that I think was probably the standout thing was when he was talking about the individuals. It wasn't just... I think what obviously came across is that he was frustrated more. You can have a superstar, and he's going to have a superstar in Cristiano Ronaldo and his team. But he felt like, I think there were too many players trying to do the same thing as Hazard. And I can only imagine he's looking at the likes of Willian and Pedro and even the strikers in terms of
and
Morata.
And even Loftus-Cheek to
an
extent.
Yeah, to an extent that would, you know, they like to have the ball at their feet. They like to dribble. And he was trying to make the point that his Napoli team were one touch and they were a team. There was no real standout stars in their side when they got rid of Higuain, obviously. Yeah.
He said, in fact, one of the reasons that he didn't think Odoi was ready to play was because his defensive phase wasn't good enough.
Absolutely, yeah. And I feel like that's maybe where the likes of Loftus-Cheek might benefit from a new manager, is just because they will be given that freedom more to go and play and more of a structure. You know, I think that... I don't know how it came to you, JK, but it felt a bit like to me, and he sort of said, you know, this was the crowning moment in his coaching career. And it came across to me as he used Chelsea as a bit of a stepping stone. And, you know, earlier on, he's, you know, when I'm saying that, he was saying, oh, you know, I love English football. I'd love to be in the Premier League for a long time. And then a week later, circumstances have suddenly changed because Juventus are knocking on the door. And he's sort of saying it's too good an opportunity to come back. And I know, obviously, he had family reasons as well because he's got elderly parents. But came across that it just felt like, you know, he wasn't appreciated by the fans. He didn't enjoy that, obviously. And he felt, right, now I can move on. And I've won a trophy. I've proved myself that I can win things. And now I've got this opportunity to win Italy and I'm going to go do it.
I got the impression, whether he did this deliberately, they didn't really care what the fans felt.
No.
But possibly he did. And possibly that was just all a mask. And in actual fact, he didn't enjoy not being not being popular enough.
I think there wouldn't be many managers that would come into a press conference after some of the things that were said about them and say, you know, oh, I crumbled, I really hated it, because he wants to stand strong and be seen to be have thicker skin than that. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think some of those chants in Stamford Bridge and you know, some of the things
Cardiff
that went
was
on.
Apparently the,
yeah,
the worst,
Cardiff
wasn't
Cardiff
it?
Was pretty bad. It's sort of obviously Bournemouth kicked it off really in that level, and then there were some times at home as well that it was
away,
really bad.
The away fans are very separate from the home fans, and I have to say, watching football with the away fans is a completely different experience than the Bridge.
Yeah,
what's it like?
It's exhilarating. It really is. It's because it's non-stop. Mm. They do not stop chanting. They do not stop singing, and the little lulls. You think, what's happened? What's going on? And they're all. There's a kind of camaraderie that, because it's 3,000 supporters altogether or less, they're there to try and not intimidate necessarily, but outshout and have their presence felt. And it's if they're not happy, and lots of them don't go to the Bridge as well.
Really?
Yeah. So
why is that?
I think lots of them live around the country. They live all over the place, and they'd rather, it's difficult to get tickets for the Bridge, so they'd rather, if they can, get an away ticket. And as I say, it's a completely different experience. It's almost like old Chelsea, what the Sheb would have been like before when it was standing. And it's not for the faint-hearted. It's I always feel there's a pressure for you if you're not singing. You're not involved. You ought to be doing it. As I spend most of my week, you know, trying to perform and performing in things, I'm almost quite, I just want to watch a game of football. You know?
I want to rest my voice.
But I've had people say to me, come on, mate, you're not singing. Come on. Right. What's the matter with you?
Do you go, excuse me, I do quite a bit of voice acting. And actually,
that's exactly what I say, actually.
I need some honey lemon. My
voice is terribly delicate. If you don't mind, I'm going to whisper. All right, I will sing. I know all the songs, but I'm going to whisper it, okay? Carefree, whatever you may be. And I'll do it like that, of course.
Wonderful stuff. Yeah. I need to ask you both about Fernando Torres. He's announced his retirement. Didn't hit the heady heights at Chelsea, but did score an iconic goal. How will he be remembered at the Bridge?
He'll be remembered for the taking the corner that Didier Drogba scored from, and the semi-final goal against Barcelona, which I have to say was almost practically a fluke because he'd given the ball away and he'd almost given up and he's walking back and he got handed it on a plate.
I was watching that again today. Obviously, it was around quite a bit, and that first touch was outstanding.
Yeah.
It was absolutely.
Well, the dilemma I have is I watched the 6-0 Arsenal of destruction of Arsenal on Wenger's 1,000th game, and you forget how good the team was, and he's not bad. He's not as bad as I remember him thinking he was.
Yeah. And it's because you're now comparing him to Higuain.
No, but it's absolutely the truth. It is absolutely right.
Rather than Drogba.
Yeah, because the standard of the team was so fantastic. And this is one of the dilemmas with Chelsea, why they've let this go over the last few years. Because, I mean, that was just a really top team. And the pressure they put on everybody saying, oh, it's a terrible performance from Arsenal. They weren't given an earthly by that side. And sorry to remind you of that, but I didn't
remind
mean to.
Who?
The Millwall fan. there. But that makes you realise really why have the board let this slip? That's the other aspect about watching Chelsea is if that was really a top side then. And Torres, he scored a great goal and some lovely little bits and pieces. And yet we were all saying, not up to it, need a better player for centre forward.
I mean, when he was at Liverpool. He was absolutely
out of this world. Best striker in the world.
Unfortunately, he set his own standard.
Yeah, and he then never
achieved that. Yeah. And yet, some pretty good stuff.
Absolutely.
But then occasionally he'd do exactly what Higuain did, was hit the ball against his own foot and the ball would go for a goal kick.
Yeah, so. He never quite... The price tag obviously never quite matched up to
I think
in
he
the
was injured.
Then.
I think he got injured,
and
didn't he?
He was just, you know, he was... And there was a lot of people that wanted him to fail outside of Chelsea, obviously. That were on him on every mistake.
Everyone in Liverpool.
Absolutely, everybody in Liverpool. Yeah. And generally around that, because back then, you know, that was big money for a striker. I mean, that's nothing now. No. 50 million is a... slightly more than a drink water. Do you know what I mean?
Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone's thinking, well... You know, we don't want him to succeed. Every time he missed was laughed out of the country.
I've watched some of those games on Chelsea TV, which is no longer going to be. I don't know how we're going to watch these games on the app, but because Chelsea TV is disappearing. But watching Kalou, who I despaired of at the time, because he would miss a number of times. He would actually be 2 yards from the goal for a tap in and hit. I don't know how he did it, hit the ball over the bar. But even he was displaying some really excellent touches.
Yeah.
And it's because we haven't had decent strikers for the last 2 years, really, that it makes you forget
since Costa there's been a parade of
parade of misfits and idiocy.
So you'll remember Torres fondly
For not achieving what he could have achieved or should have achieved. He'll go down as not being quite the proper article, but for his contribution in the semi-final and the final of the Champions League, yes, I will. I think it summed up by the fact that he came on as a sub in the Champions League final. I thought that was right, but he did provide the corner. He won the corner. So Mata took the corner and the Europa League final. Yeah, absolutely. Mata took the corner. He got the corner because he came just right in front of me. I remember it well.
Who's going to lead the line for Chelsea this season?
I mean, I think probably Giroud to start with, I would have thought, is the most likely candidate. You know, I think it's going to be a bit of a shootout between Batshuayi and Abraham, who gets the second spot. I can't imagine there being three strikers on the books. You know, it's not something that's generally heard of a lot of the times this year. I feel like Abraham's probably going to get the nod over Batshuayi, I would have thought. I think that, he's got a lot more going for him, just in terms of homegrown talent and things like that is another thing. And don't forget, Chelsea have something of a homegrown issue when it comes to the quota they need for the Premier League and the Champions League. Well, there's no Cahill, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to do get rid of the likes of Danny Drinkwater, that's another player.
Because you forget we're in the Champions League.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you need that quota. And they can't buy anybody, so yeah.
Yeah, so they, you know, you do need this quota of players, which I do think Abraham will probably get the nod.
Well, lots to look forward to. It's been a sensational Chelsea fan show. It's coming to the end. It's been a pleasure, Oliver, to be joined by you in the studio. Oliver Harbord, Chelsea correspondent for Football.London. And I think you're all going to have to join us next week on the Chelsea fan show because Frank Lampard will be wearing slippers.
Is he coming in?
Eating cake. He'll be on a yacht and he might just maybe, just possibly, JK, be the new Chelsea manager.
Well,
we'll
that would
see
be
you
lovely because I'll be excited by that.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.